Welcome to the College Knowledge Podcast, sponsored by the College Planning Network and Paradigm Financial Group. Whether you're searching for that right fit college, applying to college, or figuring out how you're going to afford it all, you're in the right place. You'll hear from deans, admissions counselors, student athletes, and scholars from esteemed universities and colleges around the country. We'll dig deep to uncover their insight and unique experiences. So whether you're a student gearing up for college or a parent with college-bound kids, sit back, relax, and listen. Like you, we have lots of questions. Our guests have the answers, and we're excited to share them with you. Let's get started. Hey guys, don't forget, send anyone our way who needs help with college or who is sending a student to college. College planning the right way requires an expert. Book a free consultation at elitecollegiateplanning.com. Hey everybody, welcome back to College Knowledge. I'm your host, Dave Kozak, alongside my co-host, Mr. Joe Kearns. Joe?
Dave?
Tis the season.
It is, sir. It is. Welcome to season two, by the way.
Yeah. Well, welcome to an official. Well, I guess we did the intro, season two intro.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I forgot.
This is the first one where we're getting gritty on it.
Yeah.
Getting into our favorite season.
Yep.
Ding the bell. Award. Financial aid award season.
Yes, sir.
So for those of you that are you know, either just jumping on or trying to understand what college planning is about, this is for us the, this is where the metal meets the meat. This is where the rubber meets the road. Any other cliche you can think of that is how this game is played happens right now. Students have gone through the, you know, 18-month process, 12-month process, 3-month processes. They're all part of the college admissions process. They've busted their humps to get their applications in. They've gone through the visitations. They've gone through all of the different exercises necessary to try and gain admission to a school. They've probably been admitted, but have no idea what the cost is, right, what it's going to be. And right now, the letters start coming.
Yeah.
The ones that say, hey, here's your package. Here's what school actually costs. And for us in the college planning industry, this is why we do what we do.
Yeah.
Taking those $85,000, $90,000 a year schools and making them affordable for families, helping families make solid choices about the school. So we've spent, you know, our careers basically trying to teach people that there is a strategy and a methodology to this, and there is a way to better your position, and there is a way to select the right school that's not just whatever the U.S. News and World Report top college in the country is, right? It's about the right fit. And Joe, we've got our little Venn diagram that we love, which is the right fit academically, socially, and financially. And I think one of the things that people fail to realize is while you may not talk about money with your children, and it may be a taboo subject for some, I don't think it should be, but it is a taboo subject historically, they understand money. They get expense. And they having open conversations about the financial component of college with your student, with the academic choices that you're going to make is incredibly important in this whole thing. And so at, you know, from now, basically January to March, these letters and awards kind of start rolling in and people are now left with, we actually have a number that we're being asked to pay. Does it work with our plan?
Right.
And, you know, some of the free advice we can give is part of casting a wide net and making sure you don't lock yourself into, a school that for all intents and purposes looks and sounds less expensive.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. We've talked about it before, right? There's a lot of noise in the college environment
a lot,
and it doesn't stop. And as I think we commented in the last one, or at least I remember commenting, maybe it was the last one or the one before, where it was, I didn't recall the pace of change being as rapid historically as it is over the last 5, 7, 10 years. And with that pace of change, the noise is louder and the noise is ever present. And I think it has people on edge to some extent.
Yeah.
You know, to the point where I'm hearing chatter out there about, is college really worth it? Should you go? Should you get it? what if my kid's going to get indoctrinated in college? And what if the, you know, what if they get COVID and they're locked in their dorm room for 3 weeks and all that stuff? While some of that is all very real, I think it's not avoidance that is the right answer for some. It could be trade schools and other things, right? We've talked about that as well. But for most families and people that want professional careers, college is a barrier to entry.
Yeah.
So saying you shouldn't go is, I think, foolish for the right candidate. Saying you shouldn't go for someone that really just shouldn't go, doesn't want to go, doesn't has no interest in being in books and all that for the next 4 years might be a real viable thing. What I think is key is not overpaying. Right. And we spent our careers helping people not overpay.
And I think, again, not overpaying has a few different meanings. Right. Not overpaying can be, are you, you know, from a very basic standpoint, are you going to school for 4 years? Or are you there for five or six? Because obviously that extra year or two ends up costing money. So figuring things out beforehand, finding that school that has the right social and academic fit, that's where that plays such a pivotal role. And then I also, you know, you have the financial piece that we, you know, or that we help families understand how the system works to say, okay, well, that expected family contribution number, if that's can be lowered, well, now you can get into a school where they're going to give you more money, you pay less. That's another piece of it. But then you also have the idea of, well, okay, you have to make a school fit financially, right? And sometimes there has to be borrowing, you know, to make a dream come true, but borrowing the right way, meaning, hey, I'm not going to take a bad loan. I'm going to have, you know, I can have the ability to pay this thing off and not pay more in interest. There's more than one way of saying I want to avoid overpaying for college. And that's where I love this time of the year, because you see all of the work that I just mentioned. Those are all the things that we help our clients with is, hey, you got to start looking at schools early. You have to start casting that wide net. You have to understand that there can be schools that want to fight over your child.
Yeah.
You know, and every school can be a little bit different. You know, you can have one family that gets accepted to 10 schools and you'll end up seeing the prices. And they're different. They can be all across the board. You know, you have one school. Hey, we accepted you, but I'm going to give you money. You have another school. We want you and we want you more than anybody else. Here's how much we're willing to show it.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of different things with the overpaying for college that I think everybody would agree with. That should be the goal. Don't pay more for something than you should. You know, like you buy a car. Well, look, I just bought a car recently. I was on Kelley Blue Book. I'm like, did I pay too much for this car?
No, for sure.
And I'm like, oh, well, okay, but I really needed it. It was a good fit. You know, I paid a little bit more, but I didn't get totally hosed. Okay, I'm okay. Nobody wants to overpay for anything if you know that it can be avoided. So
yeah, without question. And, you know, the problem that I see for most families, and really it's typically the parents, because they're the ones that are earning the income that have the preconceived notion of what college is going to cost. Everybody knows that it's expensive, but nobody really digs in to understand like how to prepare for it.
Right.
Until typically it's too late.
Yeah.
Right. Our clients aside. Yeah. But there's myths out there that exist, and I can't even count on the hands of all the people in this building how many families have sat down with me and said, oh, we're not going to get any financial aid. Our kid's not a great student. You know, we make too much money. The list goes on as to what they say. And it's just untrue.
Right.
Just all of it. On our website, elitecollegiateplanning.com, if you log in, you can get a free, I guess it's a pamphlet, used to call
electronic
it a
report, book, ebook,
whatever you want to call it, but talks about the ways to win in the college game. The five keys to winning in the college game is the title of this pamphlet, and just log in and we'll send it to you for free. And you can kind of read through it and get these points. But those myths are invasive, right? They're soccer game sideline myths. They're keeping up with the Joneses myths. They're these, you know, in the financial world, we call them killing sacred cows when we talk about like the stuff that people do. But in this case, you have to play and engage to get the outcome you desire. Mm-hmm. And I think we've, let me take a step back and talk about some of the most successful people I know. Went to some of the most unknown colleges I've ever heard of.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the least successful people I know went to some of the best colleges I've ever heard of. And so,
but they're highly ranked.
Yeah, they're highly ranked. And, you know, you could argue, are they overeducated and unproductive? Mm-hmm. And you have undereducated and overproductive people. Mm-hmm. Very real. The point is, if you get clouded by the pedigree of the school,
mm-hmm.
I would ask this, like, number one, where did you get your information on pedigree? Like, where are you coming up with this, that this school is that much better than that school? And the idea that some of the most successful people I know are from no-name schools.
Mm-hmm.
They're hard workers. They have this. And there was a, I forget the psychologist that did the study and did the report. I think there's a TED talk about it. I should find this stuff before I start talking about it. But I go through so much material in a given week that it's hard sometimes to just, you know, keep organized with it. She did this study on what makes success, like what makes a successful person. And it wasn't, the answers are staggering, but it wasn't intelligence. It wasn't the, you know, economic disposition of the family. It wasn't the follow through of education. It wasn't the level of degree that they achieved. It was the concept of grit,
mm-hmm.
dealing with bad times, struggling through it, learning from your mistakes, continuing to push the envelope forward and go for it. So for all the parents out there listening, like, get over the pedigree of the school. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't matter if the student has the grit to get the education they need, to get the piece of paper they need, to get the job that they want.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the other part of this, talking to the other side, the student, like, you're not going to graduate from college and get a $200,000 a year job with benefits and stock options and bonuses. For the rare few that do, congratulations. But the majority of students are going to graduate, get a job that probably pays less than the sticker price of the school that they attended. Mm-hmm. And you're going to be gritty and you're going to stick to it and you're going to work your way up and you're going to move from one job to the next. You're going to go for promotions. You're going to go for new jobs within the company, without the company. And you're going to use that grit to your advantage. So students, don't think you're just going to get the job,
mm-hmm.
right? The dream job. There was a time in society, and I think it's probably dying mostly with the baby boomers, where you started with one company, you worked your way all the way up through that company, you worked for them for 35 or 40 mm-hmm. years, and you retired with a sweet pension, a 401k, and, you know, some other benefits.
Lifers.
Yeah,
they were, right? Lifers, right? And at their company.
And you just don't see it anymore. Right. I mean, I've worked with thousands of families, and their parents have all had three or four different jobs. Different companies have parlayed one job experience into a better job experience mm-hmm. in another place. And so I think the students have to be more rational about what they want to do than chasing the unicorn job that very few people will get.
Yeah.
So twofold, right?
Yeah.
Parents, ease up on the pedigree.
Right.
Students, ease up on your expectation of what the outcome is, right? The outcome for college is to be gainfully employed. Then you start to work, learn, and get better.
Mm-hmm.
Then you start to be able to contribute rather than constantly download.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
It doesn't go on exactly the topic you were talking about. But again, when you have that pedigree,
mm-hmm.
you know, I can tell you there are a lot of families that I meet with where they also look at certain schools and they say, well, we can't let our kid apply there because we can't afford it.
Mm.
And you talked about like having the discussion of money. You need to have that discussion. But one of the pieces that I always say to families, it's really not until this time when you know a school is a financial fit or not. Because as much as we are experts in this area, we can give you a good estimate of what we think a school will cost. But we don't know for sure until we get these award letters, which is why part of the thing is that, like, hey, I like seeing if I showed a family this $80,000 school can be $15,000 and then it comes true. Fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, just in preparing for this show, we were looking through and we've got, thousands of financial aid awards, mm-hmm. thousands of letters, appeal letters, stuff that we've done, which we'll get into in a minute. But we were preparing and we were looking at a student and it was, I think, Arizona State versus Pepperdine, mm-hmm. right? And Pepperdine, Malibu, California, on the water, beautiful campus, everything. It was a third of the price of Arizona State, in which Pepperdine was clearly saying, hey, we want you student. We understand you family. We're going to give you a good package. We're going to get you to come here.
Right.
Arizona State was like, yeah, you can come, but you're going to pay 55 grand.
And so I that's where I also think that you need, where you don't want to limit yourself when you talked about casting the wide net. It's like the students have to understand that you might, have an expectation. Parents manage those. You may not get accepted everywhere you apply to.
100%.
Right. And it does not mean that you're a failure as a student. It's the same thing, parents, when you interview for jobs, you don't get necessarily a job offer everywhere you want. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's not going to happen. You have to manage expectations, but don't not apply to a school. But you also can't fall in love with the school before you know if that school fell in love with you. Mm-hmm. So if you looked at Pepperdine and you're saying, my God, I really want to go there. And all of a sudden they do cost $80,000 a year. Okay. Now, you know, you can't.
Yeah.
Right. That's when you can't make that. You can't afford it. Somebody's going into debt, not retiring. It's not a good financial fit, but it doesn't mean don't apply because again, how bad a school wants you, how much you interact with the school, they might say, look, this is the exact type of student that we want. We're going to give you a $50,000 scholarship to make this affordable, but you don't know until those awards truly come in.
And just to elaborate on that $50,000 scholarship, it might not be a $50,000 scholarship. It might be a $20,000 scholarship with a $15,000 need-based grant with some other leveraged piece in there, right? But I think one of the important things to take away, Joe, and we reiterate this a lot in a lot of our shows, is the landscape has changed. The mm-hmm. metrics have changed. Artificial intelligence is here. The tracking, the demonstrated interest, which it used to be, demonstrated interest was pretty much like two things. Did you show up to the college fair?
Yep.
When the school came to your school, did you go to the appointment? Did you schedule a time? And then did you show up for a visitation? Right. And did you do an official campus tour and all that stuff? Well, that was then. And really, college wasn't forced to change that whole model. Although they were slowly, they were kind of picking up with the advent of test optional things and stuff like that. They started to explore different ways to evaluate students and their interest in the institution. But the amount of touch points and algorithms and analytics that exist with every click of the mouse on mm-hmm. a computer, on a website, on the school's website, on their Facebook page, on their Twitter account, on their Instagram account, the amount of data that they can pull back and extrapolate that demonstrated interest has changed the game completely. And we've done many interviews with high-ranking officials at colleges and universities across the country. And every single one of them at one time or another has explained to us that, you know, their job is to try and fill their enrollment. Their job is also to try and fill their enrollment with as many people that can pay as much as possible, mm-hmm. knowing that some people aren't going to be able to pay as much, or some people are going to be better students than others, et cetera. The reality is the solvency of the class requires them to be pretty tight about the probability of you attending, mm-hmm. right? So I think the simplest way to look at it is if you are going through this process, trying to, be a recluse and not touch the walls and not engage, the schools are going to watch that and you may get rejected just because you didn't demonstrate enough interest in how they measure their demonstrated interest, right? So now, you haven't done, you applied, you actually really wanted to go, but you're a little bit anxious, you're a little bit nervous. You didn't want to go through all of it. You didn't want to expose yourself and go out there. That could have a negative effect, mm-hmm. right? And so there are simple juxtapositions that can occur that cause a school to say, well, this person's not really serious. Mm-hmm. And so we're not going to, you may be a fit. You may, it may be the most perfect place for you, but you didn't kind of hit the check the boxes, mm-hmm. if you will. And they just don't accept you as a result of that.
Or maybe they accept you, but they say, well, we're not going to give you some of our
money,
scholarship, yeah. grant money, because it's probably going to be wasted.
Yep.
You know, where we could use that for somebody that needs it, or we really want that student. So instead of give it to you, we're going to give it this to this other student because we think they're.
Yeah. Higher probability of attending.
Yeah.
Which is, it's crazy to think about. That's where we've gotten. But, you know, Joe, for the last, I don't know, 3 or 4 years, I've constantly said, man, I'm seeing just some weird things. I'm just seeing some weird acceptances.
Since the pandemic, 2020, things changed drastically. And a lot of it had to do with in that specific year. That was extremely weird because I saw more kids accepted off the wait list and with huge financial offers off the wait list, which I had not
rarely
seen.
Rarely happens.
But it was because so many kids were opting for a gap year. They deferred their enrollment, which then meant the following fall, schools that you would see, you're probably a shoe-in for that school. Now you're not being, but it's because, hey, the school didn't have to fill 500 seats. They had half their class deferred. So now they only got to fill 250. So they can be so selective.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of just continued. It's just things have really changed, you know, because of that 1 year, things changed drastically. And I got another, just outside that realm. Talk about a huge change outside of that. Athletes.
Well, I was about to go there. Oh my God. Yeah.
It's completely different with kids now being able to transfer school, getting extra years of eligibility,
getting money to do.
Yeah.
Like it's
crazy. That realm, that if you have a, if you're an athlete, if you have a child that's an athlete, that game has 180. It's it's nowhere near the same it was as things, kind of how the game was played in 2019.
We can send your student to the school of their dreams and send you to your dream retirement. Visit us at elitecollegiateplanning.com to get started. Yeah. And what I think people fail to realize is the trickle down effect from those things, mm-hmm. right? You take 1 year and everybody goes on a gap year,
mm-hmm.
right? These colleges are starving now.
Yep.
They've got to change and try and draw people in. They've got to give bigger awards. They've got to figure out who's really interested. They dig into that stuff. Then you throw the athletes in it and you had a team. Now you don't have a team because all the guys went to another school, mm-hmm. did this, moved from here to here. It's not something you just fix with a snap of a finger. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just 1 year, right? It was 1 year that was really bad, but the second year wasn't that much better.
No. Right? Yeah.
And we're just sort of seeing some normalcy in college attendance again, mm-hmm. but those numbers are still declining.
Yeah.
Which means the schools don't have the same draw that they've always had. Education is one of those things that is on, I don't want to say it's on the decline, but the enrollments are certainly on the mm-hmm. decline, right? So you got a school that's used to getting, 30,000 applicants and it gets 15,000 mm-hmm. and all of their historic numbers are thrown off. They're going to pivot.
Yeah, they have to. Yeah. And again, schools are run like businesses. They have to.
Hold on a minute, Joe. Schools are.
Oh, they are businesses. Not run. They are run like a business, but. That's one of those myths that you talk about.
Yeah.
You know, hey, higher education, they're there for the best, what's best for the families and the students.
Not true. Not true.
They're not.
And again, I think part of that financial fit and mm-hmm. part of that social fit is finding the schools that are there for the betterment of that student. Mm-hmm. There's no school out there that exists that is for the betterment of everyone. Right. Some schools like certain types of students. Mm-hmm. Some schools like certain types of personalities, backgrounds, histories, traits, and they go out of their way to, make it worth that student and that family's while to go there. So, I was going through award letters this morning and I have some that are, hey, your EFC is 13,000, but you want to come here, you're paying 55.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if your EFC is $13,000, arguably that's what the federal government is saying you can afford to pay per year. A school that sees that and then says pay 55 knows that that's an invitation not to come.
Yeah.
Right. Is what that is.
Yeah.
But they're saying, hey, if you're willing to pay full boat, we'll take you in, right? We need to fill that enrollment. So if you're gullible enough, or you're willing to take the loans, or you're willing to figure out how to write a check for $50,000, we'll take you. But think about that for a minute. You go through the financial aid process, and it's determined that your family can arguably afford. And I will argue that the EFC is not indicative of what you can actually afford, right? But it is the number they use. It is the way the system works. Your EFC is $13,000. And a school knows that that means from the financial aid form, from the FAFSA, and then potentially the CSS profile form, the generally accepted principle of affording college says you can afford 13, and a school says pay 55.
Yeah.
Are they really, really trying to get you to go there?
Obviously not. But it's funny. As soon as you said that, I immediately thought of their business. Think about a contractor that's got his calendar booked up for the next 2 years, and somebody comes to him. Well, what's he going to do with it? His estimate is going to be, I don't know, probably at a zero on what his estimate would. Because it's like, I can't take it. I'm not going to take it. But if you're willing to overpay five times what I would have charged, I'll take the job.
Yeah.
Right. It's that same type of idea, right? It's like, hey, if I don't need this, the only reason I would take this on is if you're willing to pay a premium for it. And great. Okay. Yeah, I'll do it because I'm going to make such of a profit off of it.
Let's put the urgency to it in a different way, right? Mm-hmm. Every single person has been conditioned by Amazon. Right. So you want something.
Yeah.
You could go to a store and be disappointed that it's not at the store you want to buy. Or you go online and you could wait a day, 2 days maybe, and have the product.
Yeah.
And so the conditioning is you can get it very quickly. So then you're going for a unique product, something that Amazon doesn't sell, something that is a specialty, and you're going through a company and the company is shipping direct to you, and they can't afford to give you free shipping because they don't have the economy of scale. Mm-hmm. So you're come to the checkout bin and it says standard shipping, 12 to 15 business days. And you're like, what? I'm going to wait 15 days. But then right below it, it says, if you want to pay more,
right,
we can express it.
Yeah.
We can give you the 5 to 10 day, or hey, if you want to pay excessively more, we'll get it there in 2 days, but you're basically paying, FedEx freight rate at $50 to get there, right?
Yeah. You're paying more for it to get shipped to you than what you paid for the item.
Correct. Right.
And I bought something that cost $50. I'm paying $150 to get it tomorrow.
Yeah. And people will pay that.
Right.
Which then, I'm talking about a $100 item that you're paying $15 extra to ship, right? Well, that's no different than paying 15% interest on a credit card for $100, right? Mm-hmm. Now, extrapolate and put the numbers that we're talking about. College, okay, you really want to go here. This is your life's goal. Mm-hmm. And someone will co-sign on the loan, and you're going to pay us $55. We'll take it.
And that's, again, where you can't fall into that trap of fall in love with a school. Hey, if you can afford 13. Right. We built a plan that says you can afford 13. That's what the EFC was. But you're going to plan fails, like somebody's going into debt. So, and again, that's a school that's not a financial fit.
Correct.
Right. One of those three categories we talked about. And that's I have those conversations with students because mom and dad come and say, you can talk to our student out of the school. And I'm like, I'll try. But that conversation should have happened a year ago.
Yeah.
It's over this amount. This is what we have planned. We'll allow you to maybe take a little bit skin in the game, but we're not going to let you graduate with $100,000 in debt. And if you go to a school that costs more than this, that's what's going to happen. The answer is no.
Yeah.
Right. So.
Well, I think that brings up a great point in the fact that parents oftentimes, they get to us too late, but they get to us too late because of their own kind of divergence of logic. Mm-hmm. And no offense, parents, I'm not trying to pick on anybody, but Joe, how many times has someone sat with you and said, I don't think we're ready yet. Or Ben, Joe, we really got to go home and talk to our student about this. Mm-hmm. And you go, okay, you're putting an arguably $200,000 to $300,000 decision in your student, right? Mm-hmm. And your whole point was the conversation should have happened a year ago with the parent and the student. And if the parent and student aren't having it, and someone's not feeding the parents and the students the information they should be talking about, like, when should you start? Right. And we've belabored this point. You got to start freshman year. You got to start early as possible in this whole thing. And it's not that you have to have the school picked out or you have to have the major picked out when you're a freshman. You got to start the targets.
Yeah.
And you got to start putting the parameters on it. And you got to start figuring out the capacity to pay. And you got to start figuring out what your EFC is going to be and what you're going to be asked to pay. Right. And if you have that financial fit knowledge when you go into the game, now you're cooking with gas. Yeah. Right.
It brings me back. So over the holidays, the kids were off from school. My wife was unfortunately out for the day, a day or two. There was a bug going around, you know. So I brought the kids in the office and actually put them in front of the camera. We had some conversations with them. But I wish I had a camera on in the car on the ride home because they are 9, 8, and 5, fourth grade, second grade, and preschool. They were so interested in the conversations and how the other one answered. How far away would you want to go? You know, my youngest was like, I want to stay with the family. I want to be around family. I don't want to go far. My oldest was like, yeah, I want to stay close. I'll live at college, but I want to stay nearby. Mm-hmm. My daughter, I want to get as far away as I can.
Yep.
Like, you know, so, and look, I'm not saying that that's going to be the same, but you should have, Dave, I wish I had the camera on because they were generally interested in just talking about college. We talked about money and how much it really costs.
$1,000.
The prices were, I think, $2,000 and $100. My youngest said $100. But the idea of saying, like, we preach it and talking about it, talk with your kids.
Yeah.
I cannot tell you that, and I know how well my kids retain information. They are going to remember that conversation for a long time.
Yep.
I remember there are things that stick out with me that I was 8, 9, 10 years old with my father that have stuck with me my entire life. There is no reason to not talk about college and especially, look,
the reality of it all.
And money is part of the reality. I grew up, you don't talk about money. You don't talk to strangers. You don't do, well, okay, now my life is to talk to strangers about their money. Right. That put me in a great position. But I can tell you that I wish that I could have recorded it because they were genuinely interested. They love the conversation.
Yeah.
Once my wife was up, they talked to her for an hour about college and they had so many questions and were just generally interested.
Mm-hmm.
And my God, I was like, this was huge.
Yeah.
This was a big deal. In parents, I had talked to parents. You talk, we got time. I got a junior. I got, you know, so I think we're still early in the process.
Mm.
No.
So, especially if you're following the one thing we're preaching is social, academic, and financial fit. You can't do that late. You have to, and the conversations don't have to be these pressure laden, like painful conversations where your teenager shuts you down and you know you're frustrated and they're frustrated. It doesn't have to go that way,
right?
I look at mathematics, and I think about, you know, do you learn to divide before you learn to add? Do you learn fractions before you learn numbers? Mm-hmm. No, it's a progression.
Yeah.
So if you have a 5-year-old, have 5-year-old conversations about college.
Right.
If you have a 10-year-old, have 10-year-old conversations. If you have an 18-year-old, have 18-year-old conversations. But don't underestimate the impact of having those legitimate, age-appropriate conversations on the subject matter.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, because it makes a difference. And I think, you know, we're talking about financial aid awards and we're trying to give the information, the advice as clearly as possible. There is a critical component here. It's unique for every family. It just is. It's, you know, academic performance matters. Social environments matter. Athletics matter. Financial position matters. Personalities matter. And each, when you take that many different things, and try to find the perfect fit for, you know, 5 to 7 different attributes, it's super custom to each individual family. So again, you know, we talk about Elite Collegiate Planning and elitecollegiateplanning.com. You can go in there, you can get a consultation. You can at least figure out where you are financially, because I think that's ground one, right?
Yeah.
Understand the finance of it.
And I make the analogy of, you know, going to college is so similar to buying a house. One, because they can cost the same amount of money nowadays.
Yeah.
Right. But like, think about as a parent, when you went first to buy your first home, you might not have known what you were looking for. You might not have known what questions to ask when you're walking through a house. And, but what's the first thing you do? You go, okay, well, what can we afford? What houses are actually in our price range?
Yeah.
And that's where I kind of say, as a parent, if you've got eighth grader, seventh grader, 5 years old, a sophomore in high school, you need to know what is affordable. Like, you need to know what you can do. And then, hey, if you want to be able to bring more schools into the list for one way or another, whether you can do things to lower that EFC and make schools that have a high sticker price now come down to what's affordable, or how do you build money up the right way to make more schools that maybe you couldn't afford, but then you have 5 years to save and you save the proper way to make it happen. You need to know what is possible. You need to know what you're doing. Is it right? Is it wrong? Are you doing things for the past 5 years that are steering the ship the wrong direction? And you have to right that ship as soon as possible. That's where those free consultations can come in, because at least you can have a starting point to know, are we on the right track or not?
Yeah.
That's where I think the biggest piece comes in. And most families don't know that answer.
No.
They just, they assume, like you said, the noise, they hear things, they look at the sticker price of schools, they say, oh, somebody said to do this, somebody said, my friend did this, so that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
And they think it's right. And then you look and say, well, your friend's in a completely different situation than you guys are.
If like a 180.
Yeah. I mean, hey, they're, you know, have divorced and remarried. You are not. Just that right there completely changes the game when it comes to financial aid with colleges. Yeah. You have to, so many little things that could just be, hey, they have five kids, you have one.
Yeah.
Totally different, you know, so you have to make sure that you have to know if you're on the right track, to know what is affordable or what you're trying to do from a goal perspective. You got to start somewhere, but talk with an expert. And we try to make it very easy to talk with one of our experts.
Yeah, for sure we do. Let me give a little lay of the land, and we're late in the show to be doing this.
But, I know. we got off on the
tangents, and I think all very valid and good points though. So worth people listening to. You get an acceptance letter. An acceptance letter may have some financial component to it. It may say, hey, you got, you know, a president scholarship, you got this award. That's not the end all be all. That is a piece of it, right? And then later, probably 2 months, right? We're in this zone now. So applications went in sometime before Thanksgiving. Acceptances started coming out, you know, unless you went early, whatever. But acceptances started coming out over the month of December. A lot of people are being accepted. You'll start seeing more acceptances. But you don't get your financial aid award letter at the same time you get your acceptance in most instances. Now, key to remember to this whole thing is that financial aid is need-based, merit-based, and other federal, non-federal money. It's any money that supports your affording higher education is financial aid, right? So step away from this, we make too much money, or my student's not good enough at the schools, right? It is the combo, and it is what determines the bill, right? So you don't even know what you're going to pay until you get that financial aid award and you understand how all that breaks down. I'm looking at one on my screen right now. It's Franklin and Marshall College. It's a very, very fantastic award. But we spent probably a year and a half planning when this child was a sophomore in high school. Then we went through the admissions process, found the right fit, academic, social. Franklin and Marshall is over $70,000 a year. This family's paying $26,000 to go to Franklin and Marshall. This is middle America. This is a $150,000 income family, right? They own their house. They've got good equity. They've got savings. They've got 401ks. They're responsible, but it's a great award. And F&M happens to be one of those schools that meets 100% of need.
Yeah.
Right. And so again, and this is just one, I can go back through this list. I've got tons of them sitting here. Let me pull up some others. But so the point that I make there is that that's an early start. That's a 70,000 plus school paying 26. You can have the inverse of that too, right? I'm looking at one from this year where family did not, well, that Ohio State one I'm looking at right here. The expected family contribution is $23,000. So $23,355 Ohio State. The estimated total cost for Ohio State. This is as of March. This is March 27th, 2022. $55,216. This family paying $49,716. Right. So, and that's one of those awards where you're like, did the Ohio State University really want this student?
Right.
You know, yeah. Hard to say.
Yeah. I mean, there's, you know, some of the ones I pulled up some awards from last year from a couple of our clients that it was, again, we planned early and not just with me from a financial side of playing the, you know, hey, how can we do some things to lower the EFC and, you know, all legal, by the way.
Yeah.
But a great one. It's one of definitely one of those myths. Like I still remember this family came in and was saying, hey, we want to look at in-state state schools.
Yeah.
And so we've got basically one, two, three, we got five schools here, right? We have University of Pittsburgh and Penn State were the two state schools.
Okay.
We got Lehigh, Carnegie Mellon, so and Syracuse.
On. Pittsburgh, Penn State, somewhere sticker price 38 to 40.
Yep.
Right.
So.
And hold on. You said Syracuse?
Yep. Syracuse.
This is 68 to 72.
And actually, they're 76. Woo! Is their cost of attendance.
That went up.
Carnegie Mellon.
Another 70 plus.
Yep, 77. And Lehigh.
Another 70 plus.
Yep.
Okay.
So go to the state schools first, right? Yeah. So this family's that EFC 16, around 16,000.
16,000. Okay.
Right. So Pittsburgh, cost to attend, all they got was a direct government loan.
So 3,500?
Yep. So there are $5,500 for the total direct government loan. Cost to out of pocket, year one, $33,000. Right. University or Penn State University. Same exact thing. Only got direct loan, all unsubsidized. They're asked to pay $31,000 a year.
Wow.
Then we go to the schools like Lehigh, right? $75,000 cost of attendance after grants, all need based, not merit, not the best, you know, not, hey, you got a perfect score in your SAT. That's not this. They were offered $52,000 in need based aid, the government loan and a work study, right? So essentially their cost out of pocket, $15,000.
Wow.
Carnegie Mellon, after, again, same situation, they're 77 grand. They were offered a $50,000 grant, direct government loan that was subsidized. So a 0% interest loan, they're asked to pay 20 grand.
Wow.
Right. And then Syracuse ends up being 18 after grants, scholarships and such. So again, this is why I get so excited this time of year is when I see awards like this and say, hey, I know that I helped this family bring that EFC from 25 down to 18 or 16. Sorry. And then I also know that we had discussions in the College Planning Network, helped them find schools that were a good fit, that would have been financially fit, that if they never came to us, they easily would have been just looking at that Penn State and that Pitt. And now all of a sudden we talk about overpaying for college.
Yep.
You hear plenty of people go to the in-state state school.
Yeah.
Well, you would have paid, again, flat out, Lehigh, $75,000 price tag, twice as much as Pitt and Penn State.
Yep.
But this family, if they never met with us, they never were taught, they never accepted it, did the work, came to us early, they would have gone to Pitt or Penn State and paid twice as much. They would have paid $15,000 more per year to go to the in-state state school. So, you know, there's so, and then God, there's story after story, you know, on how these awards essentially come in, but it's the earlier, God, it's the plan early, pay less. It's not just always based around EFC, but it also comes down to finding those schools that are a good fit. I had my other great student that I worked with last year. He's going to Franciscan University of Steubenville. He's not paying a dime. He was also accepted to Johns Hopkins. This is a kid that we had discussions and he said, you know what? I don't think that from a social fit or an academic fit that Johns Hopkins is right for me. I know it's the name, but this school is accepting my AP courses. They're accepting my dual enrollment. Not only did they offer him a full ride, which I do not see many of those. He's literally not paying a dime.
Yep.
He's only gonna go for 3 years. So he took all of that into account. And I mean, again, that's when you were talking opening the show of saying, there are some people I know. I guess what I know, this kid's going to be successful. Yep. He's just got a good head on his shoulders. He's got fantastic grades. He was good enough to get accepted to one of these schools with the high rankings and made the decision of saying, well, look what I can do. I can go to school, come out 100% debt free, and I know that I can get out sooner and start working. Yeah, this is a right fit for me. You know, and that is phenomenal. When I see things like that happen, it's what I love to do, you know, love what I do.
Yeah.
Because that is, you know, joke about being just a traditional advisor. I don't know until 25 years after I help somebody, if a plan actually worked. Now I'm talking 3-4 years of good, solid planning. You can see it come to fruition. And my God, it is fantastic to see the impact that you can have on.
Well, and I'll throw one out there where a family came to us too little, too late. Mm. They came senior year. They were wondering if we could help in any way. When they walked into the office, they threw all of their financial aid and award letters on the table. And they said, hey, this is what we got. Mm-hmm. You know, can you help us? And I said, so you went through the process. You decided to apply to elite institutions. You did no thinking, planning, or anything with it. And they got some awards. And the awards were...
Doesn't mean it was actually an award.
No.
Which, by the way, an award letter, are they really, that's what they say they are?
Yeah, no.
So.
In this one, it was Lafayette College. It was total build costs, $73,000. Mm. Total non-build cost, $23,000. Estimated total cost to attend, $76,000. They're asked to pay $76,000. And basically said, well, guys, you didn't play the game.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to pay. Mm-hmm. Like it's, I'm sorry. Another one. This was Northeastern. Got an unsubsidized loan for $2,700 a semester, and the total direct costs were $75,362. This is 2022. So, out of pocket cost for them is $72,612, and they shouldn't be paying that. There is plenty of money on the table for them. They could have planned. They could have done things different. I'll look at Drexel. Same thing, $73,000. Only award given was $5,500 for the unsubsidized loan.
Yeah. And again, you will see, you know, what we see a lot is when you have acceptance letters, award letters from one school, how different the price can be. Dave, you taught me the analogy of, you know, going to college is a lot like flying on an airplane.
Yeah.
You know, you go down the aisle, you ask everybody what they paid for their seat. Get a bunch of different, this is where, when the awards come in, this is where you start to realize, my God, everybody's price can be very, very different.
Yeah.
You know, and but everybody's going to the same school, point A to point B. Why is it that it costs more for one family versus the other? It's because of college planning. That's what real college planning. It's not just the financial side. It's, hey, maybe one of those students showed more demonstrated interest and the school really wanted them. Like they're, it's
or
not
the school
just,
leveraged them to know they could get something from the family, right? Yeah, it doesn't have to, it, schools play games with it. Yeah. That same student I was just talking about has also got into some fantastic schools, mm-hmm. mind you. Got into Rensselaer. Rensselaer, $77,000. Rensselaer actually tried to recruit the student, and the end bill was $51,000.
Mm-hmm.
Right, still very expensive. Right, those numbers are real. I mean, these are bills for what you will pay that I'm looking at. From Lafayette, Northeastern, Drexel, UConn, UMass at Amherst, all schools got into, right? Yeah. So obviously a talented student, but they're asking these people to write a check for $78,000, you know?
Yeah. And a couple of things too on the award side, realize that when you officially apply to a school, you are only going to get awards at schools you were accepted to.
Mm-hmm.
If you were declined or waived, it's a question I get asked a lot.
Okay.
You will only get an award to a school you've been accepted to. So if you're waitlisted or if you're rejected, they're not going to send you an award. Okay. Just so families know that, but also know that it could, with some schools, it could come to the end of March and you still haven't received a notification you've been accepted, rejected, or waitlisted yet.
Yeah.
Right. And so some of these schools, you mentioned, like, this is the season, but there's a reason some of these schools play these games, because you, let's just say you get accepted to Penn State. It was your first choice and you get accepted and they send you an award early. And in January you say, oh, you didn't give us any money. Okay, we're going. Well, what if there was a school like Carnegie Mellon? I don't know. Let's say that they are not going to accept their students until, or send out their acceptance notice until the end of March.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what if they now find out you as a student already committed to Penn State? Now they know they don't need to accept you.
Well, right? How would they find out, Joe? You can't get that kind of information.
What do you mean they can't get that information, Dave? Don't you think that there's some money that has to be sent in? Don't you think that maybe schools don't talk to each other? You think the counselors have to send transcripts to schools and let other schools know that final transcript has been sent? Yeah, they can find out.
Correct.
So you don't want to always jump the gun either. You know, I joke about it and say, like, look, I want all the cards on the table.
Correct.
You might not have all the cards on the table till the first week of April. Got to make a decision by May 1st. But look, awards are awards. And that also, I'm sure, you know, gets into the next step of that process, which we'll probably do a whole nother episode on, which is potentially doing an appeal.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
So again, but realize that is kind of the idea, is that you're going to send in financial forms. You're going to the FAFSA, the CSS profile, applications, essays,
institutional forms,
you know, everything gets in, and then you wait. You then will find out if you're accepted. If you're accepted, you then wait for an award letter. And then if you're not accepted, if you're rejected or waitlisted, you don't have to wait for that award letter. But if you didn't get notified by the school, they said no yet, you might not want to commit to a school yet until you know, hey, well, wait, they were my second choice.
Yeah,
they would have came with more money. Like, you never know.
I can tell you a story. Last year it was Susquehanna was the daughter just absolutely fell in love with Susquehanna University. It's Selins Grove, PA. It's a beautiful campus, right? And went down to Loyola. Now, I would argue Loyola is a better school. Maybe not a better location. And Susquehanna put a nice offer in. Loyola just blew it apart. Mm-hmm. Ended up at Loyola, which I think is a win. I academically, I thought it was a win. But the girl was inspired by Susquehanna. And the difference in the award got her to Loyola. So, yeah. I mean, it's like,
and that's good head on her shoulders. Kudos to her for realizing
that's 7 years of planning, Joe. Seven. Yeah, I met that family when she was in eighth grade.
Yeah. Well, if you met that family a senior year in high school, it's probably, well, I want to go here. I hear it all the time.
Yep.
But that's where I want to go. And parents, you get this guilt trip. You say, well, my kid did so well. They got
everything
the grades.
I asked them to do.
I can't tell them no.
Yeah.
Well, for $25,000 a year, $100,000 of somebody taking on that debt. Yeah, you might have to say
that. And let's not forget, it's not the $100,000 you spend. It's right. The $100,000 that doesn't grow to become 200, 400, 800, mm-hmm. you know, 1.6 million.
Yeah.
And the other thing that just to tie all this back together, we're talking about starting early in the conversations and getting engaged in the college planning process early. The earlier you do that, the earlier you have those conversations with your kids, the less likely you're going to get that, well, I want to go here. Mm-hmm. Right now, I can tell you this is the last story I will tell. Student got into every school she applied to. Very talented individual. Got offers beyond offers at schools. And for whatever reason, halfway through the process, absolutely fell in love with the University of Maryland. All well and good. Good school. Not, you know, I'm not taking anything away. University of Maryland was $54,000 a year. Zero money, $0, zero anything. Out of state, full tuition.
Mm-hmm.
And I had conversations and I said, this is not the school. This is not the fit. You could go. I mean, we're talking about Lehigh. We're talking about Lafayette. We're talking about Washington and Lee. We're talking about American University. We're talking all these high-end schools.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to cost 25 or below. Where'd she end up? University of Maryland. What's she doing? She's got $200,000 of loans.
Mm-hmm.
Mom's co-signed on them.
Mm-hmm.
starting life at $200,000 upside down.
Yeah.
Mom could have paid cash for the $25,000.
So my last story that I'll tell.
Here we go.
And because one of the things that I, when I come up with this, I have had to tell some families, like, hey, you can't go here. And I said, well, our son or daughter does not understand how the whole loan situation will work. And so what I basically did was ran out and said, here's the cost of school A. Here's the cost of school B. Here's what we have planned that mom and dad are bringing to the table.
Mm-hmm.
They're not budging. We set a plan up a couple of years ago that this is what you can bring $25,000 per year and not affect your retirement. This is, you know, we got other kids that we have to plan for. And basically ended up showing them, okay, if you choose school A, the one you really want to go to, your monthly payment when you graduate is $1,648 a month, right? If you go to school B, it's $332 a month. So, okay, does that hit home yet? Okay. Then I ended up saying, okay, now let's take the difference between those two, $1,300 a month. This is what type of house you could buy with that. So if you're making that money and you can afford it, you could own a $300,000 house and that would be your mortgage payment. So do you want to be living with your parents, no house, spending almost $1,700 a month on loan payments to go to this school that you really want to go to? Would you like to be able to get your adult life started and paying a car payment for 10 years? Up to you.
Buying a house, starting to,
that is basically where, and again, and then I also show them, okay, here's the actual cost, right? The school cost, you look at it, you say, okay, yeah, well, it's $46,000 a year versus 20,
mm-hmm.
right? Okay. Well, what the true cost is after interest and loans, if you go to school A, you're paying $400,000. If you go to school B, you're it's 130. So it's not just, hey, a $20,000 a year difference,
mm-hmm.
right? Or 25. It's actually in the long scheme of things, you chose that school for over $300,000 more. And guess what? Every student who does that 10 years after they graduate, they go, I didn't know. I didn't. I made a mistake. I wish I would have gone to that other school.
Yep.
And so I try to bring it up. And I'll tell you what, though, that's even doing all of this and still doesn't always make it, you know, have it work. So
rational mind's not quite set yet.
Yeah.
You know, so again, start early, start the conversations early.
Yeah. Yeah.
Take advantage of the opportunities that we provide for families to at least educate themselves. You can visit elitecollegiateplanning.com. Other than that, guys, I hope you learned something today. We'll definitely be back with another episode on the appeal process and the idea of appeal, or dare I say negotiation. Until next time, this has been College Knowledge. Thanks for listening. We want to help. Send your questions to info@collegeknowledge.net. These can be about college, finances, careers, and anything else you have questions on. Thanks for listening to the College Knowledge Podcast with your hosts, Dave Kozak and Joe Kearns. We hope you enjoyed this week's exploration of higher education, sponsored by the College Planning Network and Paradigm Financial Group. That's all for this episode. See you next time.